So now on the Innovation Show, we welcome Stephen O'Leary, CEO and founder of Olitico. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
Before we talk about Olitico and the mindset behind the company, etc., it'd be great to talk about you and how you came up with the company.
Yeah, it's an unusual route. I think every entrepreneur usually has an unusual route to setting up their own business. I studied to be a journalist. That was my degree, and I thought I wanted to be a journalist. And really enjoyed the course in Griffith College. And I actually lecture in journalism there now. At the moment, part-time. So I've very fond memories of it. And I went on to work in the industry. I worked for the Irish Examiner for a year in Cork. And an opportunity came up with a Scandinavian company in Dublin called Meltwater. And I didn't really know what I was getting into, but the opportunity sounded exciting. And I worked with them for 2 years and essentially sold a piece of software. They had a media monitoring tool that tracked international news coverage. So I was with them for about 2 years. I worked in Dublin and London and Amsterdam and really enjoyed it. And then went almost 90 degrees in terms of the career because an opportunity came up to be a sports agent on the European Tour and the PGA Tour with a startup in Dublin who had just come into being through a former tour pro and an accountant. And I did that for a year, and it was during the course of that year that the idea, I suppose, began to form that there was a gap in the market somewhere between what I had been doing for the Scandinavian firm, but really focusing in on the service as opposed to the software.
Yeah, so it became less about the software doing all the work and the person doing all the work, because it's something we see quite a lot where somebody will buy a SaaS product and it'll just sit there and they'll pay the monthly charge and they won't use it. And it's almost like they need the human element of a nudge, but also also being sent the meaningful information. Because often somebody has the technology, but they don't even know how to use it effectively.
Yeah, I think the best way for me to think about it is when you were in college or even in secondary school and you had a presentation to do, there was always one person in your class who was really good at PowerPoint. Everyone knows that person. There was always that person in the class. And everyone had PowerPoint. Everyone had the software. Everyone had Office usually on their computer. So it's not that anyone was restricted from actually accessing it, but this person had used this software much more often and it became a growing thing. So the more they used it, the better they got. You know, they could put in the slick transitions and they could make things appear, and it was always good. And in lots of ways, the position Olitico finds itself in is something similar, in that we license some of the best software in the world in terms of social listening. We've built a bunch of our own proprietary tools as well. But really, why our clients work with us is that they could go out and buy a lot of the software that we use, but the insights and the time saving are the key difference. So to your point, I mean, it's not that you can't go and get the software itself, but increasingly people don't have the time. You know, for our clients, social media analysis is usually one of 100 things they have to do in their marketing role or their communications role or their sales role. So it's important to them, but they don't have the time to go off and learn how to use this new piece of software.
And that's one of the key things we see is like you need to get your hands dirty to learn how to do any of this. Like, I mean, you can't read the manual. Or you can't read a few white papers or case studies and go, yeah, I'm up to speed. You have to get involved. It's the only way. And, you know, yes, educating yourself a little bit is good, but the deep understanding comes from being involved and being immersed in it. But, you know, one of the things, Stephen, I saw you speaking in Google one day, and you gave a great talk about social listening. And can we talk about that? Because I just think the audience would find that fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, the majority of the work we do and the time we spend is tracking what's being said about our own clients. So what are people saying about them? Are their products or their services? Maybe their competitors? But it's pretty straightforward in terms of the kind of things they want to listen to. But outside of that, we have opportunities to listen to wider conversations, broader topics and things that are of interest to us. And about 5 years ago, when we had almost no clients, but lots of time, we were talking in the office about the idea of invention and this idea of, you know, where do the best ideas come from and what happens when you ask questions of your audience. And through the conversation, what came across was that, yes, people can give very good suggestions when you ask them questions. So, for example, you know, we're thinking of designing a new car. You know, what feature would you like to see? And they might offer you a whole host of different things that they would like to see. But quite often, the best ideas come out in that moment in which someone is experiencing discomfort or annoyance or frustration. So the way we often express this, and you'll hear this every day in conversation, is, God, I wish there was a way to, or if only I could, or if only someone built, or why hasn't someone invented? So we kind of brainstormed in the office, and there was about 10 key phrases that came through. And we started to listen to see where these phrases were appearing on Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn and so on. And what were the extensions of the sentences? So what was it after I wish someone invented, people were saying? And, you know, as I say, we started this in 2012, late 2011, early 2012. And over the last 4.5, 5 years, we've built up a repository, I suppose, of between 2 and 3 million results or pieces of content where people have finished those sentences. And what's fascinating is that the kind of things people dreamed of or wished for 4 or 5 years ago, we're now seeing come into everyday use.
So can we talk about a couple of those? Because one of the interesting ones was the M&M's color sorter. Because I was at an event, a science for kids, a kind of Coder Dojo event, and there was a lot of kids doing this, and they're like, yeah, I've built this M&M or Skittles color sorter. And it was all, whatever had a variation of colors, they'd build a sorter of it. And I was like, the first place I heard of that was Stephen O'Leary's presentation a few years back.
Yeah, it's probably one of the lighter ones. And it's lovely, you know, Skittles and M&Ms are strange things in that, you know, a lot of people will talk about their favorite colors, you know, and their favorite flavor. You know, I love the purple ones, or I love the red ones, or I love the yellow ones. And the extension of that is, God, I wish I could buy a packet of yellow only, red only, blue only, whatever it might be. And what we found was that not only did people want to buy packets that just had a particular color in them, but then they were saying, God, I wish there was a way of sorting these automatically and variations of this sentence. And someone built a 3D printed version of a Skittles sorter. And it's, if you Google Skittles 3D printer color sorter, you'll find this pretty quickly. There's some great videos up there. And essentially you pour your M&Ms into it and a little laser identifies the color of the sweet and starts popping them into their different little segments. And it's, you know, that's on the very light side. And lots of the things people talk about are light, but it's sometimes the lightest things can turn out to be really important too. So one thing we saw was around heat and temperature. It's a big thing in Ireland, particularly. So we saw loads of people talking about cold pillows. So this came through repeatedly. I wish someone invented a permanently cold pillow. Why hasn't someone built a permanently cold pillow? You must be able to buy a permanently cold pillow, because we know that experience. You're in bed, it's warm, and your pillow starts to heat up. So what you do is you turn it over and you get that cool side of the pillow
for a while.
And it's lovely. Yeah. But then you warm up on that side and you turn it and the original side hasn't cooled down. And then your head is just hot. So the chillo was invented and you can now go and buy a permanently cold pillow. So we saw this, we laughed at it, you know, it works well in a presentation. But subsequent to the presentation, someone was talking to me and they said, you know, those chillos actually serve a pretty important purpose. And they said that in chemotherapy, quite often regulating your body temperature is a difficult thing to do, and particularly in the face, and what you find is that sleep as a result can be difficult. So having a permanently cold pillow, something that actually enables sleep, that helps with recovery and all of these things, actually has a really tangible, important purpose. And so out of this very kind of flippant, you know, I wish I had a permanently cold pillow, came this kind of use in a medical situation.
Yeah. And if you think, I mean, a lot of people think of social media in particular as an input where they push their message to the audience. It's a push medium, but in fact, it's a pull one, because if you analyze, like you're doing with Olytico, analyze those type of things. So the marketing opportunity for the M&Ms or Skittles or any of those, if they're looking at those kind of questions, looking for the right questions, then the opportunity is immense, because you can create a marketing campaign out of it. You could have gone to market and gone, the first people to invent this win X, Y, Z, whatever it is, and totally turn it on its head. And that's a lot of the work you've done as well with Auditico.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, the analogy that gets, that's probably easiest again to kind of remember with this is when you go to a party and you go in, you always know that person in the party who just does nothing but talk. And very quickly, that person isn't very popular at the party. We meet them at networking events too. That person who just pushes and pushes and pushes. But what's always nice is the person who will actually listen and have conversation with you. Social media is exactly the same. You know, it's full of people in parties who just want to tell you their story. They want to push that information to you. Very few people are very good at the listening side and taking a step back. But if you can, put to one side telling your story and instead listen to what people are saying, there's a wealth of information out there. And to your point, you know, marketeers have an incredible opportunity and some are capitalizing on it. You know, we see that on a regular basis, companies, particularly large companies, starting to hone in on the fact that people don't always ask for their company. Instead, they describe the problem they're having. So they might mention your brand name, but they'll describe the problem that your great product solves. And the companies that are starting to listen to those conversations are now beginning to join them and say, hey, I'm really sorry to hear this is happening. Do you know we've got product X, Y, or Z? This solves your problem. You know, can we set you up with a demo or can we sort you out with something?
And it's one of the reasons I thought it was so good to have you on the show, Stephen, is so many of our startups are, you know, creating products, but you know, it's good to know there's a gap in the market, but is there a market in the gap in that? Do people actually want that product? It's so important, such an important question to ask for startups. But, you know, it's often, so many of the entrepreneurs that have come on the show have spotted a problem and went, I'm actually going to fix it because no one else is. And then they go and create a successful product. But what you're saying is brands now are starting to tune into that finally and going, actually, this is a brilliant opportunity to just listen. And Auditico gives them that opportunity to get, you know, and you might be training the trainer in a lot of cases where you get in, you go, listen, this is the kind of work you do. And then they can take it on themselves in the future, perhaps.
Yeah. And we like bigger brands and organizations are getting good at this in lots of different ways. I mean, we see sort of, for example, in-house incubators now that a number of major firms offer. Where they're essentially investing at very early stage in seed startups. And they'll back 5, 10, 15, 20 of these companies, but sometimes it's actually under their roof. They have a section of their building. And, you know, the hope is that one or two of those companies go on to either become a successful part of the bigger company or the bigger company's at least got a stake in this very early stage business. Social listening is very similar in that there's a wealth of ideas out there and suggestions. And to your point about the market and the gap, the key thing is quantifying how big the problem is.
Yeah.
Because people will moan all the time. And it's very different between someone giving out and being unhappy with someone willing to actually buy a product or a service that solves that problem. So it's not enough to find the random piece of content that gives out about something. What you're looking for is, well, how frequently does that occur? So we saw, for example, in terms of that frequency model, on Saturday nights and Sunday mornings, an awful lot of people requesting an unsend my text option on their mobile phones. You know, so we know that if you marketed that to the right audience at the right time, probably Saturday nights and Sunday mornings, and you're a major mobile phone provider or a mobile phone maker, that's the kind of service that would be lapped up. You know, you can do it with your email. The recall button exists. Gmail have got that 5-second window to allow you recall without even the person realizing. Introduce that into text messaging and you've got this ready market of people who want it.
And again, like we talk about this, and the way to test that is a little test bed and go, okay, well, just test it in, because you can on mobile. I'm just going to test it in Dublin or I can test in Kilkenny and just see where like a good test bed is that I don't have to upset everyone with the feature straight away, but I can actually go and then measure the behavioral analytics of, is it used, is it not? But like WhatsApp did that, and then, you know, everybody started using WhatsApp for that reason.
Yeah, and again, sometimes it's sort of fairly major technological issues like that, let's say, but quite often too, it can be small, coming back to the Skittles idea, small marketing ideas. You know, we saw people celebrating are wishing that there was an option in their cars for the windscreen wipers to wipe in time with the music they were listening to on their radio.
Everybody wants that, man.
Everybody wants that. And there's a group on Facebook who celebrate when this has happened.
This show is over. I'm going to go and set up that business.
Exactly. Well, someone on a hacking website went and actually built a prototype, made a video and ran with it. But if you think about the amount of money the major car manufacturers spend, for example, on their 30-second spot during the Super Bowl, you imagine how much that airtime costs. Even closer to home, you know, primetime television slots, and how generic and boring some of that content often is. I would lap up a 60-second or 120-second piece of content where I saw the engineers at Nissan or Ford making, prototyping and running with a piece of kit that had the windscreen wipers wiping in time with the music. Not because it's going to make me go out and buy the car tomorrow, but you want your brand to be top of mind? That will make it top of mind. Will I share that video in my Twitter feed, on LinkedIn, on Facebook? Without a shadow of a doubt. And it's one of the simple things that we saw coming through, but these are being churned out on a daily basis.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about the death of the water cooler. I mean, people used to in the old days stand around the water cooler and talk about, did you see the show last night? Did you see Dallas? You know, did you see what Bobby Ewing did? And that, you know, those days are gone, but now they're happening on social. And, you know, to your point about if one of your clients did that with the window wipers, then people will start talking about that and going, did you see that thing? And then some people actually think it's real and actually tell people, did you see so-and-so are doing wipers in time with the music? It's funny, I was thinking to myself a future where I have an AI-driven car and it's going, check this out.
Yeah.
And starts doing
it. And it wants to just impress you.
Machine learning.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's something you might like. And it's funny because another thing we often hear a lot of is about the death of traditional media. You know, much like the water cooler conversation doesn't happen, you know, will we have newspapers in 5 years' time? Will there be, you know, TV or radio and so on? Or is everything going to be social and digital and online? And if you look even at the last 24 hours, so major cultural event in Ireland from a, let's say, arts and culture point of view is the Roads of Tralee, and sporting-wise is Dundalk's Champions League qualifier. Now, those were two televised events and two of the most talked about events on Twitter for a whole host of reasons. But the conversations on Twitter were driven by what people were watching on television. And equally, when people saw the conversations on Twitter who weren't watching, they often tuned in. So there is a role for all of these types of media in this. And I definitely think what we're going to see more of is television stations, radios, newspapers getting better at social listening and using this in their broadcasts and in their shows, because that's the way they're going to remain relevant and move from the traditional broadcasters as we imagine them to more of that two-way conversation that everyone now is familiar with on social.
And it's funny you say that, because you think years ago and there was everybody's talking about second screening and that kind of thing, but it's never been, I haven't seen it really done well, like the conversational, like inclusion on the main show. So on the TV show, the broadcast show, really including it well, where it's real time. Like it almost needs to be real time, because we're in the age of the trialogue where the brand puts out the message and then it's the conversation between the public that is actually what the gold is now. And, you know, we see it with Twitter buying the NFL rights to Thursday night football, that, you know, they are understanding that and they're kind of going, actually, you know what, we need to start moving this way. And more we're going to see more and more of that. We see Facebook Live, because they're actually going, and Facebook launched their sports product last year, which is actually collating everything around sports, and they went for those NFL rights. So there's a future coming there where it's actually these guys who have an insatiable appetite for stock, improving stock prices. And I suppose if you're an investor, an early investor in Facebook, you're kind of going, give me more. Every quarter it's getting better and better, and that will dry up in time, and they have to find other ways to eat into other revenue streams. So on the flip side, a broadcaster should be very cognizant of that world.
Yeah, and I think the critical point in all of that for me is the real-time element and the engagement with the audience in as close to real-time as possible. You know, traditionally that would have been polls. You know, 51% of you think this and 49% of you think
that.
Phone
polls, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not a huge leap to start taking social content and incorporating it more into broadcasts. And again, people are, we're getting there. You know, I think sometimes we can be, I suppose, a little bit hard on traditional media in so much as a lot of social and digital media is still relatively new. And we're kind of learning by doing here in terms of what works, what doesn't, what does the audience want. But certainly, if you look at Periscope, for example, and that ability to live broadcast and in real time, not only see what people are saying, but as you're broadcasting, the comments are coming up and you're expected to converse with those who are commenting. So when someone says, this is a great broadcast, you don't 10 minutes later say, John just sent us in a message saying great broadcast. As the great broadcast appears on screen, you're looking at the same screen saying, that's John over in Manchester. Thanks for the message, John. Really glad you're enjoying the broadcast.
Exactly.
But it breaks. And so John is then feels like he's in the room, yeah. That he's part of it. This is the gap or the area in which, you know, social listening and broadcasting and the more general public is going to come together.
Yeah.
And it's just a question of who gets it right first.
Yeah. It's actually funny because in a previous role, I was trying to implement this where it was like you had a member of the staff on radio as a concierge for the public. So it was like, you know, you go to a website and it's like, can I help you pop up? Almost like that, where it's basically like a spider's web for people that are interested and pull them in, and they go, oh my God, that's actually going straight to the presenter. Because that, when that happens, like it's probably going to be a salvation in a way, or at least keeping broadcast media relevant, in real-time broadcast media relevant, because it's going to get tougher and tougher unless this happens.
Yeah, and I think one of the major challenges, you know, people are going to face with this is the filtering process. So again, you go back
to That was a big challenge, actually, where everybody had.
And you look at even the first night of the Rose of Tralee on Monday, you know, we tracked about 35,000 pieces of content over the course of the broadcast that mentioned the actual competition or some of the roses. Now, that's a huge volume of content to have to sift through and identify what's the absolute noise and what's bubbling to the top as being valuable. And there's a combination of both services, but also software that's getting more sophisticated and starting to be able to pick that content out so that the poor broadcaster isn't served 100 pieces of content a minute that they've got to just scroll all the way through. But instead, it's beginning to come out that, you know, those nuggets, those really, you know, insightful pieces, the funny pieces of content, the stuff you want to share, as that starts to make its way to the top and as the technology catches up with that, you're going to see, I think, far more sophisticated use during live broadcasts in particular of social content and what people are saying.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, Stephen O'Leary, CEO and founder of Olitico, thanks for coming into us.
Not at all, my pleasure.
So just a last question, where can people find you? We didn't ask you.
Yeah, well, we're on Twitter, obviously. We have to be. at Olitico, it's OLYTICO. You can follow us on LinkedIn. It's where we share a lot of our content. We have a newsletter you can sign up for on the website, olitico.com. That's it.
Thanks a million.
Not at all.
Cheers, Stephen.